Hey, what's going on, everybody? Today, I have the pleasure to chat with American singer-songwriter, NBC The Voice Season 21 finalist Wendy Moten. In this newest episode, Wendy shares the story behind her newest single, Don't Give Up, life growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, how she has maintained integrity, great work ethic, dependability, excellent reputation, being inspired by genre-defying artists such as Lionel Richie, Adele, Chris Stapleton, Kelly Clarkson, Elvis Presley, Lynn Ronstadt, etc. Most notable ballad coming out of the rain off her 1992 album, Wendy Moten, experience on The Voice, touring with Vince Gill, and more. Now, with that being said, hope you enjoy my conversation with Wendy. Hello, Wendy. What an honor.
It's my pleasure to be here with you today, too. Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. Seriously.
Well, I mean, we have a lot to get to, but of course, I mean, there's got to be a lot of things happening in Nashville. What's going on in your city? What's going on?
Well, I just found out through you on the sports side, there's like a big, huge draft going on, so there's probably tons of people. I don't, is it NBA that's happening here? Or
No,
is
it's
it the
actually
Hawks? Is
hockey.
the hockey draft is actually happening in Nashville. What are the odds of that? Just think about that. Hockey, Nashville, center of the country, hot.
Well, I mean, not only the draft, I mean the NHL awards were just a few days ago as well in Nashville. Dierks Bentley and his host and his son Knox were co-hosting both the show as well, which is really cool to see. A lot of Springsteen was there to perform, and Jesse James Decker was there. So it was a house full, and I guess I will say that hockey does belong in Nashville. It's a great city, and they have great fans there, and obviously of course it's Music City, but it's one of the busiest cities, and it's a great place to be there, I guess. Well, I mean, first and foremost, I want to talk about, I mean, you were born in Memphis, Tennessee. Tell me about life growing up in Memphis. What was it like in the early days, I guess you could say, because things have changed drastically from when you were there to what it is now. Tell me about the lifestyle there.
Well, I've been in Nashville for 26 years. So I moved from Memphis 26 years ago. However, growing up as a child there, music was everywhere and we heard all kinds of music. And I'm a lot older than you, so we didn't have like 1,000 or 2,000 TV channels. So you had like eight and you heard everything. I watched the country show Hee Haw and the soul show Soul Train. And we all learned from each other in the safety of our homes by watching TV. So, music, all styles of music, country, jazz, blues, gospel, everything, you heard it all. And so you were influenced by it all. So that's what got me going in the music business and not being so like one-dimensional. I consider myself a Linda Ronstadt of the business because in my shows, I'll sing four different genres of music, and it could go from country to soul to jazz to Paul Simon. And it's about the song for me. So I learned how to appreciate music and know the importance of the song living in Memphis, which is a Memphis capital of music too.
And if you don't mind me asking, I mean, where did that come from first? Was it just Memphis alone, or was that something that just naturally came along the road, I guess?
Well, growing up in the South, you've heard so many artists say their dad were ministers and they went to church every day. That's me. My dad was a pastor. I went to church 4 days a week. So it really started with gospel music. And the church was my first audience. That's where you can fall on your face no matter how you mess up the words or whatever you do, get scared, cry, I don't know. They still were like, baby, it's all right. So that's the first support base I had. And from that, it's just, music has different places where it's born, but Memphis is known for soul music, like Isaac Hayes, Sam and Dave, and Elvis Presley, and known for blues, B.B. King. All the blues acts, they kind of started in Memphis, and that's like one of the blues capitals. So music was everywhere. You could not get away from it. And, it just was just going in. I'm glad that it took because I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a corporate attorney, and it didn't work out that way. The music took over.
Absolutely. And I want to read something that you said. I was interested in your background, and I wanted to know more about, you know, what your upbringing was. And what I found fascinating was, I know a lot of people will talk about your accomplishments and those things, but like, I really want, like, when I focus on interviews, I like to focus on different things that people don't like to talk about much, but that are important to the artist behind the scene. And so I want to talk about something that you said. You said, my road was paved for me before I knew it. I had a gift as a young child, but I didn't realize it. You said, when opportunities came my way, I took advantage of them because I lived in a music town. And you just keep on saying that you were blessed because the opportunities always found you. And the phone was constantly ringing. I mean, now when you're thinking about your whole upbringing so far to where you become now and the spot you're in, what goes through your mind? Are you satisfied, or are you still having that hunger to do more and to chase more and to learn more in the business, even though you've been in it for a long time?
Well, the goal is to always continue to keep growing and learning. I had the great opportunity to work with some of the greatest artists in music history. And that's what I witnessed from them. They didn't stop with like, I'm famous now. They were always challenging themselves to keep being creative, to be open, to stress themselves. And witnessing that encouraged me to, it's okay to keep dreaming. It's okay to keep, you know, acting out on those dreams, and that you never really arrive. That's what I learned from them. There is no arrival. That's just continual growth if you have the courage to fight through, you know, the doubters, fight through, you know, when I went on The Voice, I know I was going to be the oldest contestant, but I also knew I had the goods, and there was something I was proving to myself, not necessarily proving to myself, but helping myself continue to stay in the game by taking a risk after all I've done, by going on a talent contest in front of millions of people who could tell you, you suck, after all the work I've done. But I was like, you know, I got to take that risk because I need to continue. And this is the only way I see that I could, that's achievable. That's 100% achievable if I'm willing to take the risk.
For sure. And something other interesting that I found was, obviously, you're very aware and very clear about how, I guess, the record label who dropped you, when you, I guess, let's put it this way, I don't want to cut around any corners here, because being dropped from a record label is one of the hardest things any artist can face in their life. But the thing that I find interesting about you was, you seem to have this attitude of just keep on going and keep on trucking through and keep on trying to find that silver lining between different things. So when you're on the road now and you're putting out music and you're touring with different artists and you're learning from different musicians along the way, do you still find yourself just constantly on the go every time and wanting to do things and wanting to improve on different things on a daily basis?
Absolutely. You know, it did come to when I decided to go on The Voice, because my records came out in the 90s during the Whitney Houston, Celine Dion, Mariah Carey era. I was EMI Records Whitney. Every record label, whatever's popular, they want to find one. So that was in the 90s, 1993. 97, it was over. 98, I no longer had the record deal, and we parted our ways, and I had to figure out how I'm going to stay in the music game. And Julio Iglesias found me. And I said, okay, I'll stay with him for a year. I'll learn something from this living legend, because he's one of the greatest artists and voices of music history. And I'll learn something. And it ended up lasting 15 years, because I wasn't sure. I wanted to be a solo artist again. I wasn't sure how I was going to get back out there. But I had a way to experience the other side, the private planes, the crazy money, the real, like, I could live through him to see what it's like. And from that, I could decide what I really want in my heart and what I don't need. So I had the luxury of that. And that gave me some time. And then when Country Music World opened up and started hiring me as a background singer, I was like, if I'm going to be a background singer, then I need to be a background singer to the stars. I need to be on a certain level. And the only way I can do that is just make sure I'm up on my craft, stay sharp, you know, I'm always on time to have my music learned. I'm very dependable, I'm consistent. So I just need to have those things in place until I can figure out how to get back out front again, if that's something that I want to do. So since I didn't know, I took these gigs, worked really hard, never ran out of work. That's what I was like. The tours were always there. The work was always there. The sessions, my work ethic on purpose until I could figure out how to get back out front. So, but along with that, I'm learning from these artists, the pros and cons, and deciding what to keep for myself if I should get back out there. What is it that I really want and what I don't really care? It's just a fact. I can cut that. So that was all luxury. I felt like I was getting paid to learn. And then when I was ready to be back out again, to come back out and to be a solo artist, that happened during the COVID era. And I said, well, here's a great way to come back out as a solo artist, because everybody has to start over. Even the superstars didn't know how we were going to make this work, because music is a luxury. It's not a necessity. You don't need it to eat, you know. So it's like, I felt like this is a great opportunity to become a solo artist. So I did The Voice and started that journey, and it was the best move ever. And now I don't even think about being a supporter into that. I make Wendy Mode my job every day again. And I always wondered, how would I know to make that transition? And now it's very clear.
Yeah, and something I want to point out, and I found really interesting what you just said, was, you know, obviously when you're having a career like that that you've had so far in your life, and you know the ins and outs of the business very well, and you know how to treat yourself with the integrity, with the respect, with the dependability, and everything in between that you've highlighted in your bio. And but also, I guess, finding ways to be inspired by different artists. You know, Lionel Richie was one of them. You said Adele, Chris Stapleton, Kelly Clarkson, Linda Ronstadt. I mean, and the list goes on. And Elvis Presley, of course, living in Memphis. But the thing is, what did you learn from those artists that sort of gave you that, like, push to do more and to be great and to be the Wendy Moten? I guess not only the artist, but Wendy Moten, the person.
Well, I had great parents, which laid the foundation for being a great great person. So they gave me those tools of empathy, compassion, and on being honest and working hard. But I've been blessed to work with really great artists who I could learn from. And I did say no to some gigs. I didn't say yes to everything. And trust my instincts on that. And, you know, the things that I got the most, especially from Julio Iglesias, was that he never sang a song that didn't move him, that wasn't important. As a young artist, I recorded a lot of songs that I couldn't connect with, and I didn't even know what they meant. And so then there's a little loss in translation because, you know, you're not connected. So what I've learned from these great artists is it needs to mean something to them, and that's how it reaches the masses. So that's my biggest thing. When I sing a song, I chose a song on purpose. I wanted to, that's a message that I want to give to the listener. And that's the greatest thing that I've learned. And that separates me from everyone else. And it separates them from everyone else. And so that's the biggest takeaway. So I don't worry about what's happening outside of what I'm doing. I just know that, what is it that I want to say to the people through song? How do I want to reach their hearts, their spirits, their minds? So that was the biggest thing I learned.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's so much to talk about as well. I mean, the voice experience for you, and it seems like you've had such a deep appreciation for how that journey has taken you in your career now. Talk to me about the whole journey on The Voice. What was it like? And I guess let's talk about Coach Blake Shelton too, since now he's rode away into the sunset from The Voice. So let's talk about that. I'll really discuss that. What was it like?
I have to tell you, I went in. Okay, like I said, COVID was crazy. When they shut everything down, when you're an older musician or older anything, you're wondering how you're going to make it and what's going to happen with you in the music business. So I knew, here's a great opportunity. I need to get back out there. How are you going to do it? I need television because I don't have management, agent, You're in your 50s. Nobody cares. I said, I need TV. What can I stomach? What can I do? Because it's a reality TV world. And I'm from the generation, well, we don't talk about ourselves. We don't share what's going on. We're secretive. And the generation is, you share everything. So I was like, what can I stomach? I said, I can do The Voice because at least it's taken seriously as a singer, as an artist. So I didn't tell anyone. Nobody was doing anything. There was no cattle calls. You could send a video in from your home. I did it. I sent a video in. I didn't tell anyone, not even my fiance that I've been with for 27 years. I didn't tell nobody because they were going to say, what are you doing after everything you've done? Why do you can't, they can't tell you anything, blah, blah. But I knew it was the only door I could see. And I said, well, if I send in a video and they say that they pass on me, is what's supposed to happen, or if they say yes, it's what's supposed to happen. So they said yes, and then I said, okay, I'm on my way. So I had a conversation with myself. I was like, leave my ego at the house and just concentrate on the challenge of the week. Because if I could just concentrate on the challenge of the week, I'll go far, because this is a game. It's like chess, and I'm not sure I can play it, and I don't know what the producers have in mind and what kind of season they want to have. You don't have anything to do with that. So I just said, let me concentrate on the challenge of the week. I didn't want to get ahead of myself about all the stuff that I knew. That's why I was just acting like I didn't know anything. And just because I did know reality television. And I went there to learn, as I do with every experience. I went there to learn and went there humbled and, you know, do my best. Of course, you know, I learned that I was still competitive. I wanted to win. Even after I fell and broke my elbow and broke my two broken arms, I realized, hey, you still want this music business thing. Willing to do it in front of millions of people with two broken arms. And, you know, I went far. It was the best thing I could have done. Mainly for myself. It gave me the fuel I needed to continue on. Because after you get 29 years old in the music business, you're ancient and you're swimming upstream. And when the older you get, the more you're like in quicksand. So you got to decide if that's what you really want to do. And I did.
Absolutely. And I also want to, I can't stress this enough about of your journey on The Voice and what a run you had on the show, but you've had so much great performances. I mean, from your blind audition to one of the most captivating performances of all time, let me just say, when you performed Ain't No Way, and you step on a stage and you wear this regal necklace and Ariana Grande's freaking over you and telling you all these compliments and these coaches like praising you for your talents, but they didn't know what kind of career you already had behind it. And so I guess coinciding with whatever you said at the beginning about leaving your ego at the house and then focusing on the challenge of the week and doing it one step at a time and figuring out, okay, how do I navigate this first step and then go to the second step and then work your way up from there? I mean, did you feel like The Voice was sort of that self-therapy thing? Was it like a therapeutic thing for you to, or I guess, let me just say, what was The Voice a form of, I guess, reinventing the Wendy Moten from the old days, I guess the early days of the record label dropping you to now, okay, here's the Wendy Moten now that's reinvented herself to this whole another level of an artist. And now she's reintroducing everybody to what her music is going to sound like, what she wants things to look like. Tell me about that. Is that ever just playing in your career, I guess?
Oh, that was a part of the plan. It was like, if I'm going to go on this show, then I need to be strategic. I need to strategically have a plan. I need to know what it is I'm seeking. Winning wasn't necessarily, that's like number two. Number one was, by the time The Voice came into my life, I was already ready to be out front again. So I knew this was my opportunity to be out front. And then I figured, okay, well, I will use this as a tool and I will use this as my television show every week. Every week, if I'm on another week, it's like a Wendy Moten special. And that was the psychology I used for myself, because where else am I going to find one of the greatest bands, all those cameras, whole team of people, and a major network for free? Where? Weekly. So I was like, okay, you're ready now. Now you're ready to prove your theory to yourself that you're ready to continue this journey, and you're going to do this in front of millions of people, and you're going to do it on a major network. And what are you going to do? Are you going to be the artist? Are you going to be afraid? Are you going to not accept the challenge? You know, what are you going to do? And I had already made up my mind that if they accepted me, then this is where I prove, like you said, I've taken up where I left off in the 90s. Is a continuation, because I had like a 25-year break. So this was like a continuation to prove to myself and to people who remember me from the 90s that, oh, she still got it. I wonder where she was. And to new people who, like, I never heard her before, but I really like what she does. Also, my goal, one of my goals, was to tell my age often and to acknowledge the fact that a lot of people over 50, we still have value. So that was one of my speeches also, because there's so many people over 50 still doing things. I got so many emails and messages from people saying, oh, you reminded me of my passion. I picked it back up again, because we're told once you get a certain age that nobody cares. And people don't care, but you should care. Most people don't, but you should, as the person with the dream, with the vision. So that's what I encouraged. That's what people were telling me I was doing for them, because I wasn't backing down. I wasn't hiding. And I'm like, I don't care about doing that. I want you to know who I am, because I'm not just the only one. There's hundreds of millions of people like me out there. But what I did was tell them it was okay. It was okay. And why not? You're not hurting anybody, but you're fulfilling your own life, dreams. We only live once, they say. So I went on the show to do that too, just to encourage everyone, and especially all the people over 50, that, hey, you still can pursue your dreams and for yourself. That's it.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about as well, very quickly, about your song Coming Out of the Rain, which was, I guess, one of the most notable ballads that you've had in your career.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure you have a video out with that song, which I will actually put here for people to listen to. For people who are going to be listening to this, what was it like making that song? What was the process behind it?
I was so green. And so much I didn't know. You know, I always had a gift. I always sang, but I never in my wildest dreams thought I would get a major record deal and be a recording artist. I didn't see that in the cards. So when I got this opportunity, this gentleman named Dick Williams, he worked at Warner Brothers for years. And when he retired, he wanted to manage artists. And he didn't know me at the time. He was from Michigan. He was visiting Memphis. I was in the studio singing a jingle for someone. And I wasn't even professional per se. I was in college. But I would sing some jingles, national commercials, you know, sometimes to make a little extra money. And he happened to stop by the studio to say hello to the owner. And I was singing a song. And he's like, who's that girl? Her name's Wendy Moten. What does she sound like with a band? And the guy didn't know, because we didn't do live gigs together. And but he had a band. He said, I'm going to be here a couple of days. Can I hear what she sounds like with a band? And they're having this conversation without me. I'm in the other room singing. And so they asked, hey, can you come sit in with Nico's band? I said, sure. At that time, Saving All My Love For You was out there. Aretha Franklin, Zoo Zoom and Who, and those type of songs were out there. Greatest Love of All that Whitney did. And so I sang those songs. And he told me, I think I can get you a record deal. And I'm like, okay, but I'm not signing anything, but okay. Coming Out of the Rain was one of those songs. He had a songwriter Because he came back months later with three songs. Come In Out of the Rain was one of those songs, written by Curtis Boone in Detroit, Michigan. And, you know, he brought the songs back. I recorded them. At that time, I was so naive and young about recording. I literally recorded like a few lines at a time, you know, because it was a hard song to sing. I didn't know what I was doing. And, but we got it done. We got it done. We got it done so much that not many people know this. Hardly anyone knows this. But the recording of Coming Out of the Rain, the one that made the record, is the demo. It is the demo because I couldn't beat it. I couldn't beat the performance. And there's distortion all in it. But because the performance was great, that's what connected with the people. We chose that because I couldn't duplicate it. I couldn't beat the demo. So that song is the demo, and I never got a chance of re-recording it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, Coming Out of the Rain was a top 5 hit on the Billboard Adult Contemporary charts and a top 10 hit on the UK singles chart. If you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. But she's also got a lot of new music out as well. Don't Give Up is one of the main ones that you've recently released. And this one is interesting, I will have to say, because there's a lot behind it. And you've said that it has become a message that I keep living every day. You said, I don't know how much louder it could have been than falling on The Voice and getting back up. I knew I had to get up if I could, and I did. And so that song name, Don't Give Up, but that message has been a philosophy that you've had for decades. And is it still the same message for you now?
Oh yeah, it still is. My guy who's been with me, David Santos, he's a bass player to the stars. He's been bass player with Billy Joel, Crosby, Stills and Nash, John Fogerty, Melissa Etheridge, and on, David Santos. We've been together 27 years, and we wrote this song in 2009. Maybe it was to encourage us. I don't know. But it wasn't ready to be released or heard, or I don't know. But after everything I went through these last few years, it made sense to record it and put it out. And I say that the people who've been following me since the 90s or even sooner, since I was a little girl at church, they saw in my journey, I never gave up. And then the people who saw me fall on The Voice, they saw the next day I was on the set with two broken arms. So they witnessed that in real time. And I still, when I sing the song, I have to stop myself from tearing up because it's so real for me. And I'm so full of gratitude that I didn't give up. And when I talk about it, because it's so hard to keep going sometimes, because the journey is between you and you anyway. But, you know, when I sing the song, I had to sing it the other day at one of those country girl in the round things. And I like teared up the whole time because the words are so alive for me. And I even put a post up a couple of days ago. I was like, I'll be glad when I can get to the point where I can sing this song without crying. Happy tears, but it just starts from the inside out. And we got a really cool video. And in this video, I asked my friends just to say the words, don't give up. So I got all these cameos with Vince Gill, Martina McBride, Kirk Whalum, Warren Treaty, the Chapel Heart girls. It's got John Oates, Blake Shelton. He's in the video too. And so the fact that these people would take out the time to just help me by just saying those words, because I told them it's my personal PSA, public service announcement, to encourage others as well as ourselves.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, as we're wrapping up here, I really want to touch on briefly and quickly about Vince Gill and being able to go on tour with him, perform with him and his family. And one of the more, I guess, really cool performances I've gotten to see on YouTube was when Karina stepped on the stage and she opened with when my mama prays, but which was Vince's actual song, which was When My Amy Prays, because people who don't know the context of the change was because when Amy got into a a bike wreck, but she's doing fine. And she's recovering pretty good right now. But at the time, it was a tough time for them because of the uncertainty within, I guess the traumatic things behind seeing a parent go down like that, and how much it impacted the family. And I will put the video of Liza Jane and When My Mom Prays in this portion of the interview. But I actually want to get to your cover of Ain't No Way Live with Vince Gill, which was really cool too, which I'll put here on the interview portion as well. Talk to me briefly about that experience with Vince Gill, just touring with them, and what is it like?
Well, in 2016, he gave me a call. Now, mind you, I'm a working musician, so I was on tour with Martina McBride 2014 to 2016. When her tour was over, I was trying to, you know, talk her into keep going. You need background singers. Come on. She's like, no, I'm going to do my thing. Go back to what she normally does. Literally, I was unemployed for 24 hours. And I got a call from Vince Gill. And Vince was like, hey, Vince Gill, want to see if, you know, you want to come out on the road with me? I'm thinking, I'm like, oh my gosh. First of all, how did you find me? Because we don't have the same friends. And to me, he is the emperor of country music. And so I'm like, the emperor is calling me. So I was in LA at the time, and I said, I'll be back in a couple of days. So I met him at his favorite breakfast place. And we talked, and of course I asked, how did you find me? And he said, I asked around town. Nobody had nothing to say bad about you ever. And you're, you know, you're pro and blah, blah. And so he was like, would you come out on the road with me? I said, oh my gosh, yes, I will. And thank you so much, because technically I'm unemployed. So now I got my next gig. And I said to myself, okay, now I got to learn how to sing country music for real. And I always do research anyway when I'm working with different people. And the research for working with country, Vince Gill was, I studied the women of country music in the 60s and 70s. And I said, if I can capture how they perform, what they do, what is that thing, and match Vince Gill's songs exactly like the record, I'll be able to keep a gig and keep a friendship, I hope, forever. So that's what I did. And I took those tools from the Tammy Wynette, you know, and what I learned was they stand very still. They sing with their lips very closed. And there's no big motions. You know, in R&B, the mouth is wide, you know, I sing wide. With the country, it's like real tight, stand still. And they sometimes look like they're about to burst into tears at any moment. So if I can do that and then sing Vince songs and it sounds just like the record with the country inflections and everything, he'll think I'm a genius, which he did. So he had me sing with him for all those years, and which he ended up producing a traditional country record on me called I've Got You Covered. I'll send you the link to that. And I've Got You Covered, and it's traditional collection of traditional country songs, which when I sing country, that's what I go to. But working with Vince, he's always going to have the best musician. He's an amazing musician, songwriter, singer, guitar player, the top of his game on every level. And just the fact that he would call me and have me make music with him on his stage was already, a plus. So I'm going to do my job, which is make sure he don't worry about what I'm doing. He knows I got it. And so then, years later, after The Voice, he came to me and said, because I was going to go out on the road with him anyway, hey, why don't you be my special guest in the show? I said, wow, okay, thank you so much, because I'm getting a billing from it, and it's with Vince, and he's selling out everywhere, so it's a plus for me. And it was something I didn't have to ask for, something he offered, and then he put me in the center of his show, which was, that's a gift too. And so just him giving me that spot was amazing. I thank him all the time. I just saw him yesterday, by the way. I was at the house. He's so gracious, but not just to me. So many people. I've heard so many stories from huge acts. Oh, when I first moved to Nashville, I met up with Vince, like Sheryl Crow, and they all told these stories. CMT has this thing called Giants, and they were honoring Vince Gill, and they had all these stars telling those types of stories of how Vince Gill helped.
Absolutely. And you've had such a great performance and tribute to Vince as well, performing on the CMT Giants. And I guess that was your first ever red carpet event. And that's got to be a fulfilling moment for you, being able to not only pay tribute to Vince, but also a friend, being able to perform his song, I Still Believe in You, which is a
Yeah.
just a smasher of a
Iconic.
song, smasher of a song. Well, I mean, it's been such an honor to be able to chat with you and really pick your brain about your whole career and getting to know your background and everything. Thank you so much again.
Thank you for having me. And you're amazing. I mean, you ask amazing questions. Thank you for thinking of me. I'm always gracious and grateful when somebody wants to hear the story, because a lot of people don't. And when you have someone that does, it's a blessing. So thank you for thinking of me too. And doing your own work. You knew everything.
Well, I mean, I only had like one day of like research, and I had to really like scramble to find different things. But I'm so glad that we were able to explore a lot of these things with you, and being able to really understand what your music is about, and understand what you want people to know about yourself
Thank you.
and your experiences. Well, I mean, to the listeners who made it this far into the episode, thanks so much for sticking around. I hope you enjoy my conversation with American singer-songwriter, NBC The Voice Season 21 finalist, Wendy Moten. You can find her on all social media platforms. Actually, go stream her music as well on all music platforms as well. You can find my show on all podcast platforms. I've been your host, Mikkel, saying thanks for tuning to the show.